Morning. Hi, good morning. Just a few instructions for the kids before we go into our story of peace this morning. Any children ages 3 through kindergarten are welcome to go downstairs for a playtime and story time. And the nursery is open, of course. And we encourage all families, though, to remain together if you would like to for this time. And we do have activities packages at the back if your child would like to come collect one now. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Laurel Pritchard, and I've been attending this church for a long time. And it is good to be with you. Advent is sort of a special love of mine. So the Advent committee phoned me up and said, "Peace, how do you feel about peace?" And I thought, But it seemed like a good idea, so here we are. Thank you to those of you who are planners and organizers. This service that will be a little bit different doesn't come without helping elves who do behind-the-scenes things. So thank you to those of you who are bakers and prop makers and graphic artists. Now, our service will be a little bit different this morning. We're going to move around a little bit, and you have some assignments to do. I'm a teacher by trade and can't not have homework. So just be prepared for that. You should have a little pencil. There's a golf pencils at the doors if you need them. And there's also a little map of where we're headed in your bulletin if you need that. With all of those things in place, let's pray. How silently the wondrous gift is given. Lord, we are expectant now that we might receive this gift that we need, so that we might become that gift that others need. Amen. This morning we're going to take you on a little journey of peace, peace received and peace extended. Maybe not just the absence of craziness, which could be peace, but shalom, deep peace, that feeling of contentment, completeness, wholeness. The journey we are on will take us through four scenes today, four scenes in the life of Jesus. But before we get there, I want you to know that today we're going to try something. We're going to try and see and hear and smell and taste, even, what peace might be like. I have this book on my shelf at school, and it's great. It has, they polled children around the world and asked them, what does peace feel like, smell like, taste like? So this is my particular favorite page. Is it there? Yes. What does peace smell like? Peace is like a bouquet of flowers in a happy family's living room, like fresh new furniture, like the wind that comes in your nose when you're sleeping, like fresh air that makes you want to go out and sleep in the sun. And this is my personal favorite, like pizza with onions and sausages that just came out of the oven. Or perhaps, if you're not really a smell person, what does peace sound like? Like the growling bear of war who gets shot by a love arrow, says Irene, who's age 8, and the fighting stops. Like a silent day, like laughter and happiness, like children on their birthday, like parents when their kids get married, like raindrops falling, like everyone's heart beating and making one sound together, like no voices, like voices singing, like no bad words. So as I was preparing, I thought of all these connections. How does peace have anything to do with this Advent season? And two of the most major ideas, of course, are that Jesus is the Prince of Peace, and he came to bring peace on earth. And those are normal places we would land. Those things are both very true. So how is Jesus the Prince of Peace, and how did he come to bring that into the world? Because on the other side, we also know that Jesus said, "Do not suppose that I have come to bring peace to the earth. I did not come to bring peace, but a sword," in Matthew 34. He cleansed the temple and blessed the peacemakers. And yet we heard his mandate was to bind up the brokenhearted last week. Stephen James says this about that tension. Jesus, the real Jesus, is earth-shaking. He will both calm your soul and send a tidal wave of truth crashing through your spirit. As soon as you try to figure him out or wrap your mind around him, you'll get lost in the mystery of this man. And then he turns to poetry, as all good theologians should. Child of earth, son of heaven, fragrance of light, strength of eternity, former of worlds, shaper of souls, storm of glory, love of God, tamer of tempests, raiser of the dead, offender of the religious, befriender of the outcast, lion of conquest, lamb of sacrifice, hero of the ages, tale-bearer of eternity, king of all kings, servant of all servants, calmer of consciences, disturber of the peace. So, I thought, in order to get a real glimpse of peace this Sunday, we should actually have a look at what Jesus does and says. Seems like a rational place. When I get stuck, I go back to the Gospels, where we see Jesus interact with real people in real situations. So we're going to head into these stories. They come in Luke's Gospel, midway through the 8th chapter. We begin in verse 22. These verses follow Jesus commenting that his mother and his brothers are those who do what he says. Perhaps there's something there for us. Maybe as we watch Jesus, we will be able to see what he says and to turn around and do it, to bring peace into the world and be peacemakers. So here's what we will do. I'm going to move through four scenes, and then there will be four responses. We're going to listen, connect to our own stories, write a little, and remember. One day, Jesus said to his disciples, "Let us go to the other side of the lake." So they got into a boat and set off. And as they set sail, he fell asleep. Then a great squall came down on the lake. They were being swamped. They were terrified. So they went and woke Jesus up and said, "Master, Master, we're going to drown." And Jesus got up and rebuked the wind and the raging waters. The storm subsided, and all was calm. "Where is your faith?" Jesus asked them. In fear and astonishment, they asked one another, "Who is this that commands the wind and the raging waters, and they obey him?" So we'll push the pause button on our story there for a minute. Of the many things that have been said about this story and could be said about it, we first of all see, of course, Jesus as Lord of the natural world, and yet peacemaker in the midst of it. He is not put off by the storm, not threatened. He is not panicked or anxious. In fact, we find him sleeping when the sailors, the disciples themselves, are coming undone. Jesus exudes peace. And then his central question, "Where is your faith?" You know, I've been thinking a lot about this story as I've sort of worked through it, and how he says those words matter. In Mark's gospel, it's almost exasperated. Jesus comes to them and says, "Where is your faith?" Or does he come to them with a different tone? I think he comes to them in this moment and says, "Friends, look at me. This is where your faith should rest, not in what you think you can do or handle or manage. Cast your lot in with me, and I will give you peace. I can actually calm the external world and make the raging storm cease, and I am willing to do that for you here in the middle of your panic." I think we can probably all think of our own examples here. We've either heard of or know a God who can intervene in dire circumstances. The point I'd like to make for us this morning is that Jesus brings peace to the external world, the natural landscape. He rebukes the storm, and for them in this moment, it reorders everything. N.T. Wright says, we either throw ourselves on the mercy of Jesus because nothing else will help, either we trust him or we are left at the mercy of the storm. So now we come to our first invitation to respond. We'd like to give you some time to let your exterior world settle. Dave has prepared a beautiful piece of music that I hope will be a signal for our hearts to trust rather than be left at the mercy of the storm. Perhaps your world is a bit of a storm this morning. Maybe you came and went. Maybe you couldn't find your boots. Maybe your car didn't start. And even I know as we plow toward this holiday season, it feels like we just never catch a breath. So let's do that now. And perhaps what might float through your mind is Jesus' question to the disciples. Friends, where is your faith?
Peace that was meant to be with God as our Father. Brothers, all are we. Let me walk with my brother in perfect harmony. Let peace begin with me, let this be the moment now. With every step I take, let this be my solemn vow, to take each moment and live each moment in peace eternally. Let there be peace on earth, and let it begin with me.
Thank you. So now we move to our second destination. Not exactly a place where you would think you would find peace. They move to the region of the Gerasenes, and the story picks up in verse 26, pardon me, like this. They sailed to the region of the Gerasenes, which is across the lake from Galilee. And Jesus stepped onto the shore and was met by a man who was possessed by a demon. For a long time, he had not lived in a home or worn clothes, but had lived among the tombs. He came and fell at Jesus' feet and cried out in a loud voice, "What do you want with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? I beg you, don't torture me!" For Jesus had commanded the demon to come out of the man. The man was usually held by chains, both hands and feet, and kept under guard. But the demons had broken the chain and sent him into solitary places. And then Jesus said, "What is your name?" "Legion," the man replied, for many demons had gone into him. They begged Jesus not to send them into the abyss. There were pigs feeding on the hillside nearby. The demons begged Jesus over and over again to send them into the pigs. He gave them permission. The demons went into the pigs and rushed over the hillside into the lake and drowned. Those who had been tending the pigs were terrified, and they went into the towns and villages to tell everyone what had happened. They came back out to see Jesus, and they found the man who had been possessed by the demon sitting at the feet of Jesus in his right mind. And they were overwhelmed with fear. And they begged Jesus to leave their region immediately. And so he got back into the boat. The man who had been possessed by the demon came and begged Jesus to go with him. Jesus said, "Stay. Go home. Tell the people what God has done for you." And so he did. He went into the towns and villages and told all the people what Jesus had done for him. And so we see our story progress a little bit. We move from the storms of life to what I'd like to call an internal storm. Not to downplay what actually is going on, but to set it in our context of peacegiving today. Jesus knows what is inside this man, and he knows what is inside us. He knows what it needs. He comes along and steps into that. This situation needs peace. There are demons in this man, and they are driving him to break his chains and injure himself. What I would like to center on, though, just a small fragment of all the things that could be said. Look at what happens when this man encounters Jesus. There are all these things going on, and it must have been terrifying. And Jesus says, "What is your name?" He speaks directly and connectedly to this man. He gives him his full attention, even in the midst of what must be a dangerous internal storm. Secondly, it is striking to me that the demons have gone and the people find him sitting at Jesus, clothed and rational. And it is here that people are afraid. It doesn't say that they're afraid earlier, though they've kept this man under chains. It's here that they are afraid both of Jesus and what he can do and what is going on. A third thing stands out to me. Jesus says to this man, "Return home. Tell what God has done for you." So he goes away and does it. How do we respond to our internal storms? I know when I have had that season, I don't necessarily go and tell everybody about it. And yet, this is what Jesus asks him to do. And so, I'm going to ask you to do two things in response to this part of our story. One, I'd like to tell you my own story of internal angst and have you listen in on some of the feelings behind that. And then I'm going to give you a couple of minutes to maybe jot down some ideas, your story. And here comes the homework part. This afternoon, over lunch, I want you to tell that story. Tell someone what God has done for you. Enact this part of our story. Well, I brought along my rain pants to tell you my story. There they are. Bought them at MEC. They're quite the pants. And they remind me of peace in probably an unusual way. This summer, as you know, I do quite a bit of traveling, and I didn't make my annual trek to Africa. I was just tired at the end of the school year and worn out and frustrated and emotionally kind of at the end of my rope. Maybe you know that feeling. If you don't, I could explain it in more detail some other time. But just wound up and kind of angry and frustrated. And so some other friends of mine were going on this trip, the Camino de Santiago, which is a trek across northern Spain. It's an ancient pilgrim trail. And they invited me to come along. And so I thought this sounded like a great alternative, right? A huge hiking trip. That'll be an antidote to stress, right? Well, if you know me, you know that physical pursuits don't exactly produce peace. And so I thought, yeah, this is a great idea. And then the more I got into it, the more I thought, what on earth have I gotten myself into? I'm exhausted. What am I doing? But I bought the shoes, and I learned more about socks than you could ever have known possible. And so I got my socks, and I got my shoes, and you might have seen me actually around town. I got ready because I was ready. I was going to do this thing. It was going to be my thing that I was going to do, but I was terrified, absolutely, frightfully terrified. I love to travel, but the decision-making and the on and off and non-English-speaking countries and in and out of train stations and organizing things makes me even more exhausted. So I got on the train and I went up to northern Spain to meet my friends, and they were gracious enough to actually pick me up at the train station because I probably would have come undone if they hadn't. And so we got together and spent the first night there, and the next morning was to start the trek. Well, here I am, keyed up, wound up, tighter than a spring, and I looked out the window and it was pouring rain. Now, it was hot, hot, hot this summer in Spain, but pouring rain. They hadn't had rain the whole time they'd been traveling. So here we are, can't see across the street kind of rain. In fact, the lady at the little place I was staying said, oh, wait half an hour, it will be, you know, it will let up. And I was determined, so I put on my horrible rain pants and I went out. If you've ever been hiking in a hot country in the rain, rain pants are not a good idea. And I put them on and it was like hiking in a baggie. Just imagine, right? It's hot, and I was wetter inside the rain pants than without them. And I thought, this is it, I've messed it up already. And I decided I was going to do this, and I gritted my teeth. And the first picture on the left there is the first sort of stage of this journey. It was pouring rain, and I had my rain suit, and I was gritted. And I finally had to stop and start taking layers off because I was so hot and so tired and so angry. But something happened as I peeled off my rain pants and put them in my pack. A little voice whispered inside me, this is all you have to do today. And that to me meant something. My life is full, 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 full. This one thing, this walking, this was all I had to do. What? Singularity? One thing? And something happened. As easy as taking off the rain pants, my spirit changed. And somehow in that first hour, I was calm, safe, free. So that's me in the middle there, taking it easy, starting to relax. The end of that first day, we celebrated with cake, of course. And I don't know if I've ever felt so internally relaxed. That is a miracle. So now it's your turn. Take a minute and think about your own story. Where has God come to set you free? Thank you. peace received and peace given isn't just personal. And as our story progresses, the circle widens and we catch another glimpse of peace. Now, Jesus returned to the other side of the lake. And when he arrived there, a great crowd was waiting for him, for they were expecting him. And a synagogue leader came and fell at Jesus' feet. His name was Jairus. And he begged Jesus to come home with him because his only daughter, a girl of about 12, was dying. As Jesus went on the way, the crowd pressed in so tightly that it almost crushed him. When a woman, who had been subject to bleeding for 12 long years, no one could cure her, she came up behind Jesus and she touched the edge of his cloak, and instantly the bleeding stopped. Jesus then stopped, turned around and said, "Who touched me?" Everyone denied it. The disciples said, "Master, the crowd is pressing in all around you." Jesus said, "No, someone touched me. I felt power go out from me." And when the woman realized that she could not go unnoticed, she came in front of all the people and she fell at Jesus' feet and she told them what had happened and how the bleeding had instantly stopped. And Jesus looked at her and said, "Daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace." And so we come to our third response. Jesus brings peace to our social landscape. We see Jesus travel along, getting pressed by the crowd. He meets some more people who will be given peace in a moment, and we'll come back to Jairus, the synagogue leader, in a bit. The other person, though, we need to meet is a woman in great physical need. And Jesus attends to her need for peace without almost even meaning to. For 12 long years, this woman has had a condition that no one can cure. We learn in the Gospel of Mark that she spent everything she had in search of a solution. Also, because of her condition, and here is where I'd like us to land, she faced social isolation. The bleeding would have made her unclean, and that would have separated her from community. And here Jesus asks this rather profound question: who touched me? Of course, there are people all around, and Jesus is about to stop in the middle of the road and in the midst of a totally other journey to recognize that someone needs him right there. He's not too busy. He is not unaware. He is going to meet her right there in the middle of whatever else is going on, even though she doesn't even want to be known. When she's healed, her fear seems to be more out of being recognized, out of being put in the spotlight rather than the bleeding itself. And even to this, Jesus says, "Do not be afraid." By the way, have you noticed along the way how much fear there is in these stories? I wonder if we could make a case, and I haven't done the word study to figure it out, but I wonder if we could make a case that fear is actually the opposite of peace. External fear, internal fear, social fear. N.T. Wright says this: "The message that Luke would repeat to us today if he were here, in whatever problem or suffering we face, it is the presence of Jesus, getting his hands dirty with the problems of the world, that is what we need and what in the gospel we are promised." As we live inside Luke's developing story, we find Jesus quietly coming alongside us in our own muddle and fear. He welcomes the trembling touch, and he responds with that biblical command, "Do not be afraid." And so she comes to Jesus, and she tells her story. And Jesus gives her a word right there. Daughter, he calls her. Your faith has healed you. Go in peace. She has been recognized, connected, restored to relationship, commended, and blessed in that one simple sentence. She's been given great peace. So how do we respond to a story like this? Perhaps it's time to write a little again. If you flip over your map, there's a bit of space there that you've already probably used. We're going to take a couple of minutes, and I'd like you to think of someone, perhaps in your world, who could use a bit of societal peace. Someone maybe who is reaching out to touch you. Who are the folks that you have noticed that are outcast, set apart? Someone, perhaps, who is in need of wholeness, shalom, peace, recognition, connection, restoration, commendation, blessing. Could we be peace givers in this way because of the peace that we've been given? You can take your pencil and write a bit, maybe even just the names of those in your community who need restoration. So now we move to our fourth scene. It's a domestic scene. We leave the crowd and we move to Jairus' home, and we finish our story there. While Jesus was still speaking, someone came to him and said, "Do not bother the teacher anymore, for your daughter has died." Overhearing this, Jesus said to Jairus, "Do not be afraid. Just believe, and your daughter will be healed." So they continued on their way, and when Jesus got to the house, he would not let anyone go in with him except Peter and John and James and the child's mother and father. The mourners had already gathered, and they were wailing at the top of their lungs. And Jesus said to them, "Stop wailing. She's not dead. She is only asleep." The people laughed at him because they knew she was already dead. But Jesus went in. He took the girl's hand and he said to her, "My daughter, get up." And immediately her spirit returned and she got up. Jesus commanded them to give her something to eat. Her parents were astonished. But Jesus warned them not to tell anyone what had happened. So in this final location, we return to Jesus, meeting Jairus, the distraught father. Remember, he had come to plead with Jesus. He had fallen at his feet like the others and pled with him to come home with him because his daughter was dying. While Jesus deals with the hemorrhaging woman, news comes that his 12-year-old sweetheart is gone. And Jesus responds, and he speaks these words that must have been so impossible to this father. "Don't be afraid," Jesus says. "Just believe, and she will be healed." Few people are probably going to believe you. And Jesus asks this devastated father to trust. He's going to stand in opposition to all that has sucked the truest peace out of their family and brought death. And Jesus steps into that. He tells the mourners to stop wailing. He gets laughed at. And then, before we can even catch up with our story, the child who was once dead is now living. In saying, "My child, get up," Jesus has initiated ultimate shalom. He's been doing it all along, and we get it here where he restores what has been damaged by the brokenness of sin, initiated all those years ago in the garden. In this moment, he is enacting what will one day finally be complete, when he makes the whole world right again. Death, the final crusher of peace, is overturned here in an instant, and peace is brought to this family and to the waiting world. We know our world is broken to bits, don't we? I read a blog this week that actually spoke it quite clearly to my heart. Sarah Bessie says this, "I am waiting for all things to be made right. Aren't we all? I'll be honest," she says, "I'm not feeling the joy these days, and I'm learning to be okay with that. I'm learning to be okay with the sadness that rises with the frustration of a broken world, with longings unfulfilled, with the profound ache in human hearts for things to be fixed, to be restored, to be redeemed, to be whole. I'm learning to turn toward a third way, the one that holds out both joy and sorrow, the one that picks up one small stone to move a mountain in an act of great faithfulness. Advent today is one small stone." We know that people we love are struggling, and we need a Savior who suffers with us, a God who weeps, who longs to gather himself as a mother hen gathers her chicks. Advent, strangely, she says, has become more important to me as I've gotten older. And then she says this, "Now that I have fallen in step with the man from Nazareth, I want to walk where he walked into the brokenness of life and see the kingdom of God at hand. Now that I've learned how much I need him, I've learned to watch for him until he comes." And it is this that we remember at the table today. In his own life, death, and resurrection, Jesus restored wholeness and peace. And he is working it out even when it seems impossible. Here in just these few verses, we catch a glimpse of what is to come. The birth of Jesus, his life and work, put skin on the plan that God has always had to redeem his people. We celebrate this at the table, that Jesus, Lord of peace, has come to be the ultimate antidote to fear in external circumstances, internal train wrecks, societal brokenness, and our incredible need for total restoration. We enact the meal that he gave us just before he went to the cross. We participate in it until all things are restored when he comes again. Today, our time of communion is a chance to reflect on that peace. Peace given, received, shared. So, as our fourth response, I'd like to ask you to do something a little different, if you are willing. The servers are going to come, and the elements look different today. There's a gluten-free option, just as a note for those of you who need that, and it'll stay here if you want to participate that way. As the baskets are passed, take a fresh roll, a box of juice, and participate in this feast of peace. I'd invite you even to play a little with your food. Hold it, smell it, taste it. You might even turn, if you feel brave enough, to those around you and serve them with Jesus' words from John 14. He says this, "Peace I leave with you, my peace I give to you. I do not give to you as the world gives. Do not let your hearts be troubled, and do not be afraid." We are celebrating this wholeness and this restoration, the ultimate peace given with these wonderful tastes and smells. Because I believe that this might be what peace looks like and smells like among us. So enjoy, pass the peace, share it with your family and friends, and proclaim the peace that Jesus has given. Perhaps, friends, this is a small action of what peace looks like in our midst.